You're listening to the podcast with a K, available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, Audioboom, and thepodcast.co.uk. And if you're listening, I'm so sorry. Or, you know, leave a review or something. Thanks!
Okay, let's move along. Now, I'm interested in, we were talking about sort of like adult stuff, not boobies or anything, I'm just like in the universe or adult programs, Torchwood, whatever. And, you know, Torchwood wasn't the first kind of adult thing in the Doctor universe, because first of all, we got Series 7, Season 7 back in 1970, which is quite mature in tone. And then we've got Blake 7, which has to take place in the same universe as the Doctor Who universe, because, you know, people are wearing some of the same clothes in some scenes and using the same weapons.
Technically does, according to Lance Parkin. And,
well, there you go then.
And Chris Boucher.
There you go. And of course, created by Terry Nation. Mm-hmm. And it started in 1978 and finished in 1981. And if you haven't seen Blake 7 before, you really should check it out. Especially, I think it possibly is a little bit slow in parts of Series 1, but I think with Series 2 and 3 in particular, it really gets into its pace. And it's quite dystopian, and but so well acted, and by the main actors, Gareth Thomas, Michael Keaton, Paul Darrow as well,
Michael
and
Keating,
big fan. I know that, and it just came out wrong.
I know, but it's just being someone else, Birdman,
and of course Jacqueline Pierce as well.
Yeah,
and the big sort of Stephen Grief, Brian Croucher kind of debate as well, but. The thing about Blake 7 is that, like, portrays this sort of a band of rebels flying away from some galactic empire, just like Star Wars does, but in a completely different way. So I wonder if we can maybe now start getting a bit more optimistic for a Blake 7 reboot or remake or whatever. But in the meantime, I went to the cinema last night to see The Force Awakens, and I think you two guys have been as well, haven't you?
We have.
Get out. I think one of us might have already mentioned that.
Yeah, you went twice, Brian Turnover.
I did.
Why was that? Did you leave something behind? Or?
All right, well, okay. It was a two-part thing, and this is going to sound a bit terrible, but you have to remember I was a little under the weather. For the first viewing, I thought it was a 7:30 show. It turned out to be a 10:30 show, and I wasn't feeling well as it was, right? And so I was fine. I was feeling okay. And I'm watching the movie, you know, the Lucasfilm Limited comes up, you know, the crawl text comes up. And then all of a sudden I start to feel my head start to bob and nod. Like, I'm tired. I'm dog tired. I'm beat, right? Well, hold on now. So I'm catching it. Every time I'm doing it, I shift myself. I try and make myself a little uncomfortable so I'm not going to fall asleep. I'm moving around just trying to, like, okay, I got to stay active in this seat. People are going to think I'm the most fidgety nut in the world, but I'm doing it. Well, I apparently nodded off a little bit because at one point when Finn crashes on
Oh yeah, just stop there. By the way, listener, there's going to be spoilers aplenty in this. So if you don't want it spoiled, turn off the podcast now, because we're going to ruin it for you.
Well, at least that part was in the trailer.
Woo! Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
but when Finn crashes on the planet and then he gets to the little town and Rey already has BB-8 and is saying that there's a map inside and she's got to get it to the Resistance, I'm sitting there going, when the hell did that happen? Because I swear to God, I thought I only just like bobbed and nodded my head. I do not remember falling asleep.
Well,
so
I've heard about you on Twitter. This is amazing. Yeah. I didn't know it was you.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised. So I went. I realized I was talking with my girlfriend at the time, and she said, "You must have missed like 20 minutes." And I'm like, "No, come on, no." So we went to see it again because we were both interested in seeing it, and I realized I didn't fall asleep once. I fell asleep twice because I fell asleep for a little bit. I woke up, I saw some things, and then I fell asleep again and missed stuff. So altogether, I missed at least 20 minutes for sure. So the second time I was much better. I caught up on what I missed. And there you go. I feel like an idiot falling asleep during a Star Wars.
Okay, James McLean, I've read some criticism about this episode in the Star Wars story, comparing it unfavorably to The Phantom Menace.
Really?
Yeah. To do with things like, and get this, thinking of The Phantom Menace, things like characterization and kind of motivation and plotting. And particularly surrounding Rey and Finn. What would you say to such criticisms, McLean?
I think there are a lot of criticisms I could give you about that film. I was not impressed. I thought it was like Into Darkness for the Star Trek, Abrams' Star Trek sequel, which had a great trailer, and the film just felt like it was having a hyperactive moment and didn't know where it was going half the time. It felt very uncoordinated, unstructured. But I think it's where it was, its saving grace was, and where I don't think you can at all compare it to The Phantom Menace, was I think the characters were charismatic. I thought Finn, Rey, I thought Ren. I thought all the new characters worked.
Yeah.
And I had no issue with them.
Yeah.
So I think there's loads of criticisms you can have with the new... I think there was... The way it sort of modelled itself so closely on A New Hope seemed almost insulting.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's three ways you can look at the Force Awakens. The first one is as a nostalgia fest. What bits are great because you are connecting it to your experiences as a kid? Second is how it sits as a critical examination. And a third, as an introductionary process for new audiences. So I think there's three ways to look at it. And I think it responds well in all three ways at different points. But I don't think that means it really totally holds well. It doesn't feel as crafted as New Hope. I don't think it feels, and people might be shocked, I don't think it feels as Star Wars is the prequels in some ways.
Oh, I would disagree heartily.
I mean,
with
I felt
that.
The
yeah,
feel
I've
in
got
the
to
prequels.
Say the same.
I felt, I mean, was there any wipes in this? Did they use wipes at all?
I don't know. I didn't notice any.
That's
I, would
what
have,
I, mean.
I think I would have noticed that.
Cinematically, it didn't feel quite as processed like Star Wars. Now, as I say, I think the characterizations were far closer to the original than the prequels. And I far prefer this to the prequels. So I'm not saying it's not as good as the prequels. I'm saying it's better than the prequels. But I didn't feel the Star Wars aspect of it as much as I thought. It felt almost like a homage to Star Wars, and it did a continuation. I think.
Well, I mean, if I was making a Star Wars film after having what is considered to be, I suppose, not a disaster, but critically panned isn't the word either, but films that are not popular, to follow films that are not popular, surely the thing you would do is go back to basics and plug into that initial Star Wars.
This has always been my worry with Star Wars. Is there really only one plot, two plots to it?
Well,
that's entirely possible.
But what I was going to say is also, the Phantom Menace did the same thing, didn't it? It started on a desert planet, with spaceships flying over the top of it, etc., etc.
But I mean, this was more like, this was worse, because this was.
Oh yeah, I know. You had a giant sort of sun-sucking planet killers.
Finding a native who then goes on a mission, who finds Han Solo, who then eventually takes out... It was, you know, very much almost intentionally plotted to map onto Star Wars. And I kind of felt... I can sort of understand why you do it, in the sense that this isn't just for old fans. They are looking at trying to get a brand new audience into this, for this wide audience appeal. So I can sort of see why they could say Star Wars is a very good introductionary piece to sort of try and get people involved into something which itself is set as if it's a continuation of something. So I think that's possibly why they modelled it on Star Wars, because it is a middle road, literally, for new fans and old fans.
I think it also had parallels to not just the first film, but Return of the Jedi as well,
yeah.
and possibly more in there. But I think certainly its parallels were in the original trilogy more than anything else, more than just one film. But I felt, in some way, James, I felt the same as you in the respect that I thought there were too many parallels. It was too heavy in the parallels. It was too much almost like the same film. And I had flashbacks to Into Darkness. But then by the end of the film, I felt okay with it all because I actually felt like, no, I enjoyed this. The new characters were likable, unlike the prequels.
Yes, definitely.
The story to me was more coherent, unlike the prequels, or rather less blatant and in your face, because the prequels kind of threw everything that we had learned over the course of three movies at us, like basically within one, you know. And
the prequels
were really
terrible. Their story
and we got more believable character development.
Definitely.
And I know, and there's some people out there who raise their eyebrows at the suggestion of character development in Star Wars, to which I would say watch them again.
But the thing is, with Into Darkness, I felt the parallels there were far too heavy, especially considering you essentially just told the same movie over again. You just kind of swapped character roles.
Well, you borrowed scenes, literally. You literally lifted scenes.
Exactly.
I don't know what you're talking about here, because I haven't seen Star Trek or Into Darkness.
All right, well, it's tough. Basically, just put it to you this way. If you see Star Trek The Wrath of Khan and then you go see Into Darkness, you're going to basically feel like you've just seen that movie, even though certain things are different. They are very different movies, but...
You feel, I think Brian's got a point, is that they are like New Hope and Force Awakens are different movies.
That's what saved it for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Into Darkness, he literally lifts key moments which were pivotal and iconic to the franchise,
yes,
and tries to redo them again in his film. And with their films being, with having no breathing space, no pacing, and being different films, you can't just wedge them in and make it work. So
yeah,
Force Awakens didn't make those mistakes at all.
I'll put it to you this way. One of like the most iconic scenes, and it's one of the most complained about things with the special editions, is Han Solo shooting Greedo before Greedo has a chance to kill him. You know, picture in the new Star Wars movie, Rey doing the same thing, or Finn doing the same thing in an exact duplicate scene. That's kind of what Into Darkness did. And, you know, honestly, Into Darkness wasn't a bad film if you kind of just watched it on its own and separated yourself from the parallel aspect of it. But it was too heavy. It was too blatant. Whereas this one, this is my personal feeling on this, and we'll see how it actually pans out for 8 and 9. But I think it was done partially on purpose in the respect that the first three films that they had done, the 1, 2, and 3 episodes that they had done in the 90s with George Lucas, they didn't really feel very Star Wars to me. Yeah, they had Jedi, and yeah, they had the Force, but they felt a little bit too sleek in Star Trek for me in many respects, because things were so clean and nice. It didn't really quite feel right. It just felt like Star Trek with Jedis. It was a little odd for me, and that's part of the reasons why I don't like it, aside from the fact that the story is just incoherent.
Jedi Federation.
Right. But with this film, I had a sense of Star Wars about it. I mean, there were landscape scenes, you know, that you would see, like the sunset scenes that they tried to emulate. Anytime JJ showed a shot of a Star Destroyer, he found an interesting angle to take the shot of that Star Destroyer to kind of emulate the epic one from Star Wars, A New Hope, you know, that intro. And I found that very interesting, that he really thought about what is the essence of Star Wars here in these shots that I can do. Things really looked Star Wars to me. But I think what they were trying to do was say, hey, look, we want to reassure you that this film is Star Wars, so we're going to draw you in with familiar. We're going to make this world be familiar. We're going to make it be Star Wars. And then for episodes 8 and 9, I'm hoping that even though we're still going to have characters like Luke and Leia and Han and Chewie and whatnot, I think that's fine.
Well, not Han.
Well yes, actually you will.
I don't know. He's been announced.
He's been announced as coming back. So
really?
Who knows what capacity, but flashback, Force Ghost, clone, who knows? You know, take your pick. But I know. But to me, it was, I think they're probably going to, now they've established this, I think they're going to find their own feet for the next leg of it. Maybe there'll still be some parallels, but I don't think it'll be as heavy. So I think personally the parallels here were reassurances, where the parallels in Into Darkness were kind of, I just want to tell that movie
I think the other problem, and I think SFX, actually, they're one of their articles picked up on this, and I think it's a very good point. I think it was SFX. Well, it might be Denegate. It was one of them anyway. That Star Wars, there was a lot of homage to previous productions, Kurosawa productions, obviously The Hidden Fortress, Alex Raymond's Flash Gordon. And that was very clear within the show. And this only felt like it sort of had Star Wars as its source material. And I do feel, I think that's possibly where, as I say, I feel that the prequels had a feeling of Star Wars in a different way. And that was, is that you, they had a little more of that sort of, I think it was in the editing and in the processing, the wipes, the sort of, there was just something which felt a little more of that sort of influence than this had. This felt very contemporary, and that's probably a good thing because it is there for new audiences as well.
What do you think of the abandoning of the expanded universe?
I like it.
I think it's a fantastic thing to do because they're then able to pick and choose the good things, the good ideas from that universe.
Yeah, like for instance, I think it would be great if Mara Jade becomes a character in the new series because you can just start from scratch with her, you know, and I think that would be great. But I think this is what I don't like, and here's actually this. I'm glad you brought this up because there's something with the new Star Wars film that I actually got a little bit annoyed by. But remember, with every Doctor Who book that they put out there, one of the remits was you can't need this to understand the TV show because the casual viewer isn't going to watch this or read this rather. Mm. So to start the Star Wars universe with all the expanded universe stuff, you know, it would feel like people thought about the Time War. Yeah. Where can I read about this? I need to understand this. So instead, you drop it, you start from scratch, you have a clean slate. People don't really know what's coming, although in a sense it did help us quite predict everything in The Force Awakens, to be, if I'm completely honest. But you have that sense of freedom. But the other thing with that, which I just lost my damn train of thought on, you can bring in what you like. You can start over. You can just bring in the characters that you think would work, but you don't need anything to be learned beforehand. However, they then write books that explain in their new version of history what happened between Return of the Jedi to The Force Awakens. And someone put it to me that, you know, it's kind of needed knowledge. And I want to disagree with that, but unfortunately some of the things I was told was kind of like, wow, that's interesting. I wish that was kind of in the film. But it doesn't mean that it won't be. It doesn't mean that the next film or the next film will touch on those kind of histories. It's just that there's a book that explains it to you now, yeah. Which I think personally is a bad idea.
I mean, there's a lot, though, in Star Wars, which isn't, and that original trilogy. I mean, perhaps one of the things that this did well to homage the original, which the prequels didn't, was it stepped back and said how this Star Wars as a political, economic, social system works. We don't know. We really sit on the fringes of it. We sit on either the rebellion. Well, we sit really with the rebellions. So we don't really see the inner systems of government particularly. And you get that in this new film, while the prequels were really trying to flesh that out. And I think that's probably the best way to do it. At the same time, I don't know. I just kind of wondered whether there was a missed opportunity. I mean, I don't want to think that they should have been political, but it seemed very that they set up something which didn't really seem to make any sense to me, that there was this new republic and there was this massive antagonistic force, the New Order, and then there was this resistance. And it was like, how does the resistance relate to the New Republic? Surely, how does that work? Is it because we're a little older, these sort of things come into question? But, you know, with the original Star Wars, it was the Galactic Empire. The Republic was crushed, so the rebels were what was left of the Republic, the fighting force. Here, what the hell was Leia? And I think as soon as you lose a bit of that, you start to lose a little about what the characters are meant to be doing. They start to become a little bit more, than sort of chess pieces. Leia's there as a part of this resistance, but you don't really feel what her relationship is to the New Republic, to the Republic, compared to the New Order. And I think that frustrated me a little. It felt like it was borrowing from Star Wars without really making their new story feel like there was sort of certain structures to it. And
I can see where you're coming from with that, and you know, I can get behind that if it is not explained. But again, take us back to Doctor Who 2005. You know, we didn't need to be told about Gallifrey or the Time Lords or Two Hearts or regeneration straight off the bat, even though we as fans already know all of this stuff. And I don't really think her relation to that right now, in my opinion, needed to be straightforward. I think they can delve into that as they have more time for that story, because that wasn't the story that they were telling with this movie. So I agree. I see where you're coming from.
With this movie, I think that sort of got me as well, is that with New Hope, you can say this is the story of a hero going to save the save a princess and destroy the evil fortress, essentially. With this, it was sort of doing that, but it wasn't. It didn't seem to know. You couldn't really pin down what The Force Awakens was really about, apart from...
Well, what I liked about it was the fact that rather than... like. With Star Wars, it was a little bit the same thing, where it was the sort of the reluctant hero kind of storyline. Somebody gets drawn into it by accident, you know. The story in The Force Awakens for me was essentially it was the rebellion or the resistance, as they're now, or that faction is now called, looking for Luke Skywalker because they're trying to stop the First Order. Essentially, they're trying to finally end this war because as it was explained to me, and this is unfortunately one of the things that supposedly are from the books. Is that there was a treaty made between the rebellion and what was left of the Empire, what became the First Order. And this is why I think the next movies need to expand on this a little bit and not just leave it in a book. But even though the treaty was made, you know, the First Order wasn't really going to sit still and follow it. They were just biding time. And the rebellion knew this, you know? And so my belief is that they really needed Luke back. They really needed some hope here again, almost a new hope, if you will. And then Finn and Rey just get caught in the mix of all of this, and a little bit more haphazardly, I guess, than Luke, but almost exactly in the same way, as we've already pointed out.
Is that not, this is where I think the film falls a little for me, is that rather than doing the Death Star again, should the film not really have been the similar sort of thing as they were doing, but actually just really focus it on a journey to try and find Luke Skywalker? Do you see what I mean? And that would become your structure of the film. Once they get to Solo can meet the little racial alien trope, as they always have, who I actually can't remember her name, but I liked her. I thought she was a good character.
Maz Kanata.
Yep, I thought she was, I like another good character into the series. And then from then moved on a few set, in, you know, chapters that would sort of lead them on their route to trying to find Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, I will agree with that because I think that they kind of got to Luke a little too quickly, and
it felt
I think
like
that
they've forgotten about him, and then suddenly at the end, oh, R2's woken up. I assume R2 had been trying to computate the path or what.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
And then he's suddenly they're off to find Luke Skywalker. You think, well, if we'd not had this stupid Starkiller thing, which wasn't really needed at all, and they were just two sides, or if they'd actually, in a way, perhaps adopted Raiders of the Lost Ark as their model rather than New Hope. They might have had a better structure to the film. And like I said, I did enjoy the film. I thought it was a fun film.
Yeah.
My fan moments, I felt quite teary when I saw Mark Hamill turn around. Seeing the Falcon moving again was a great moment for me. I found the Leia Han thing quite touching, even though Ford did feel a little like he might have been phoning it in. I'm not sure. I know how much he's always hated Solo, and his salary was apparently very nice. But... the moments as a fan I really liked, and there's bits in the film I thought were really cool as well as an action film, and I can understand where kids would really get into this as well, but I just felt there was that contemporary Hollywood film rush feel to it where it doesn't breathe, it doesn't really have structure, it is just that series of what can we spectacle next?
It was definitely set piece after set piece, wasn't it? And I think I've always often wondered about Harrison Ford, the reason why he doesn't like Han Solo. I think it's because he got old while he was making the Star Wars films.
But yeah, he loves Harrison. I think if you compare Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I know, but if you look at him in 1977, then look at him in 1983. That's a guy who's crossed 40 and looks it.
But he doesn't.
Whereas Indiana Jones films are post that, aren't they?
Well,
he never looked like Han Solo in Star Wars again, did he?
I don't know. It could be. I mean, they're such similar characters. I find it weird that he has such a dislike for one and a real love for the other. But
it could even just be down to the whole thing, like with Christopher Eccleston, you know, worried about getting typecast because you've done a particular science fiction film. Science fiction, while that movie broke records and was great, science fiction for a long time, even after that, was still a niche thing that people didn't want to get stuck or lumbered with. So he might have just not wanted to go back to that for that whole aspect.
He hasn't done any other science fiction, has he, other than...
No, aside from, I think there was, what, Ender's Game, I think he did?
Blade Runner, he's still cast.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Crystal Skull.
But, No, yeah, but I still can't decide whether, you know, when they through serendipity find the Falcon, Solo and Chewie, which again people have said, well, it's because they were looking for it, the Falcon had been activated, they honed in on it. Or you could just say the force and the struggle of these very intertwined characters within this universe does have a natural serendipity to it.
Do you know, I liked it best that it was just serendipity. I liked it that it was just this random accident, like that they were just flying and were like, oh crap, isn't that our ship? But I like even better now that you're mentioning that the force just has a natural serendipity to it, rather than they were tracking anything, because I think they would have found it by then if they were tracking something with the ship.
Well, I like
the force explanation. I'll put it to you this way. I am okay with random happenstance like that, as long as it's done well. And I thought that whole scene was done. I felt the whole interactions with everyone, with Han Solo, basically, and Chewie, was really done well. So I thought it worked. I didn't mind them being the ones who randomly just found the Falcon after it had just had its first maiden voyage in years.
But did we need the whole setup after that with the bounty hunters? With the people that he owed money to, and the tentacles?
I think we did, because we needed to know that he was a smuggler now. We needed to know where Han Solo was at in his life. He wasn't a general for the rebellion anymore. He was back essentially to how we knew him in A New Hope. So I think it was necessary. I don't know if we necessarily needed those beasts, but you know, I wouldn't have minded his ship getting raided by smugglers that he owed money to, or whomever that he owed money to, because I felt that established where Han was in his life.
What did you think of Kylo Ren compared to Anakin Skywalker?
I
leaps
like Kylo.
And bounds above Anakin yeah. Skywalker, oh, yes, and I'll tell you why. Because for me, when he took that helmet off the first time, when he was with Rey, and you got that sense of like, wow, he's just a spoiled brat. There was something. It was way better than the Anakin Skywalker thing, because I also got not just a sense of spoiled brat trying to be something that he wasn't. I got a sense of multiple personality disorder. Like when he's got that helmet on, you know, he is Kylo Ren. He is the Sith Lord. You know, he's dark. He's you know, aside from a few lashing out, like when he destroyed that computer bank with his lightsaber because he was pissed off. You know, he's showing like his two sides. But I thought it was handled so well, because in the new trilogy, the whatever you want to call it, the prequel trilogy, Anakin always just seemed like a spoiled brat, even to the moment when they put the frickin' Darth Vader suit on him, and he has that the worst moment of the entire trilogy for me, which is hard to say because there are so many worst moments in that trilogy.
Once.
And he stands up and he just screams no.
Do not once in the Japanese translation or Korean
Are you
translation.
Kidding? Is that what it says?
So that's where the do not want meme comes from.
Oh,
if you
my
ever see
God.
That, that's, yeah.
No, but it was, I mean, like, they couldn't have even had him, like, the man just got himself burnt to death. You know, he just lost his wife and his kids. And you know, he should have, when they put that Darth Vader suit on him, it should have been, this is who I am now. It should have been dark. It should have been the Vader that we know. You know, and it was terrible. Whereas with Kylo Ren, it was really cool, especially in the moment when he kills Han Solo, how he's like, as someone put it to me, he's not conflicted by the call of the dark side. He's conflicted by the call of the light side, which was a really interesting twist, we thought. But he looks like he's genuinely there trying to ask his father for help. And then in the end, it's just like, nope, I'm here with the dark side. And his voice changes. Even though he doesn't have the voice changer helmet on, his voice changes to the Kylo Ren rather than Ben Solo. And it was really great. It was so much better acted, in my opinion, than Hayden Christensen's Anakin Skywalker.
But did it, again, I mean, aside from the fact that it does follow almost an identical trope again to the Ben Kenobi Darth Vader death in Star Wars.
Right, yes.
Given where that Han is now playing that sort of Alec Guinness role in Force Awakens, there's this thing that seems to happen a lot now in movies where moments of sacrifice or poignancy happen mid-action, and so thus lose the loss of momentum that sort of brings you to those moments, to that finality. And again, I'm sorry if I'm ragging on these little points, but they were little things which bothered me in a show, in a franchise which means a lot to me. It just felt almost, even though it wasn't inconsequential, because this was a father trying to reach out to his son,
yeah,
its placement felt so wrong.
I agree, like, watching it as a film, like, it did seem like, what are we doing here? You got a mission, there's people out there dying. But then, knowing what I know from my own dad, my own mom, you know, and my brother now, who's a father, and other friends who are as well, if that were your child and you were that close to possibly blowing him up with this planet, you would stop everything to go have that conversation.
I'm talking more structurally rather than within the motivations within the story, which are fine. I mean, as a point of structure, Into Darkness did this again, that you kill Kirk off just, and then you go immediately into Spock going to go and beat Khan scene, rather than the death of Kirk being a final moment. You get it in a lot of films these days that when there's a death, it seems to happen, it doesn't bring to the end, while Wrath of Khan is obviously a very good example of where you put it at the end. Return of the Jedi with Vader's death is at the end of the action, so you can have that moment and that little bit of a breather. But there's no real breather in this, and that sort of takes away from the power for the audience to sort of just be able to take that moment in.
Yeah, because you've got Chewbacca taking out a platoon of stormtroopers, and then you've got
back into lightsabers. So
Rey, yeah,
you've got no time, and you've just I just kind of felt so.
The only thing I could liken that to, though,
huh?
Yeah, the only thing I could liken that to, we're looking at it as storytelling methods, but think about people in wartime. You're in war, you just lose your best friend. If you don't get moving, you're going to lose yourself and other best friends as well that you're working with. And I think that stories need to, I'll put it to you this way, the best way that we said, earlier we talked about Russell T. Davis and his era and how it worked well and it was great, but by the end we were sick of the formatting. Well, every movie can't do the same thing, put the death at the end, because then they're all going to be the same.
They're
all going to expect that the same way.
That's what I'm saying, is they always put them into action. And so Han Solo, killing Han Solo is, unless obviously he is literally coming back, is such a major thing. And they did this to Kirk in Generations as well. You know, this is a major icon. If you're going to go that route and have the balls to do it, which I think is great, you need to give it that moment for the people to really invest in it. And for him to just sort of topple off into the void and then it going back to explosions just sort of felt, this doesn't feel, this is fiction, this isn't reality. Star Wars specifically is almost entirely fantasy. You're not meant to see it as a grounded reality. It just felt a little out of place, like so much in the film, that if it just been reordered in a little bit. I mean, personally,
here's a thought, though.
Yeah.
Let's look at it this way. My brother called me last night, wanted to talk about the film. He was very upset. Okay. The parallels aspect for him were part of it, and he's going to see it again to make up his mind on that, because he kind of felt it was a little too heavily paralleled. But we're seeing it with my nephews and I think my niece on the day after Christmas, and he said to me, Logan, who is the youngest nephew and also the kind of most sensitive one and who loves the Star Wars universe to death and Han Solo, he said, I'm conflicted. Do I tell him Han Solo dies beforehand, or do I just let him see it to decide for himself, like how he's going to feel? We kind of both felt we should probably warn him just knowing who he is. But do you think Han Solo's death was written the way it was so that the audience didn't have time to sit there and grieve so hard for children, since it is a family film, since it brings us full circle to the family conversation with Doctor Who earlier? Well, do you think that doing that brought children back into the fight, brought them back into the fun of the film, and didn't let them leave them on such a massive character death for them to go home crying their eyes out?
Isn't Star Wars a little about that? I mean, Empire Strikes Back ends with Han Solo being lost, literally. Which is a quite
but
harsh.
He's not dead. He's frozen.
But it's still,
the kids don't know that.
Yeah,
you
but
know?
For a kid, that is still a harsh thing, is to not have a resolution like that. It's at the time was pretty, and at the time, no one was actually saying he wasn't dead. There was a whole point that he might not be.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting thing. At the time of Empire, was that something that was discussed? Did people say, wow, what a thing to do to children? Did they learn from history? Like, I don't know the effects of children on that film. I mean, I remember seeing it in a theater, but I don't remember bawling my eyes out about it. You know?
I just feel that as a kid as well, if you've got someone that you really like Han Solo, sort of like Obi-Wan in the first film, I just kind of felt it was the wrong place to take out a major character. They could have done exactly the same thing. I know this off the top of my head, but I would have placed it at the end of Rey's battle with Ben. Somewhere around there is where I would have put it.
And that probably would have worked really well. I mean, but you bring up Ben Kenobi. You know, you got to remember, when people first saw Star Wars, Ben's death was not at the end of the film. Action did happen immediately after it, and it was another one of those echo and parallel kind of things with the story. But the difference is that people didn't really know Ben Kenobi like they do Han Solo. Well, you know, maybe kids today with the prequels do, but people, when we saw it, when we were young, we didn't know who Ben was. He was just this little guy who helped Luke. It was sad that he had died quickly, but we didn't have three movies invested with that character prior to his death.
Which is even more of a reason why such a major character shouldn't just disappear midway. It just feels like a waste. It felt the same with Kirk. You know, when Kirk
But unless it's like I said, though, you know, trying to take people's minds off of it, because you do want the impact of that scene. But I do think, especially like after the discussion with my nephew, I do think it will probably be an easier thing if he sees the death happen and then there's more film, more adventure afterward, take his mind off of it rather than here's the end credits, go home.
Then I don't like, think I mean, I'm not sure then you should be killing him, because I just didn't feel that his death, because his death was also one that lacked relevancy within the plot. His death was inconsequential, aside from the emotional relevancy of what he was doing. I don't disagree with what the character did, and that was the right motivation. It is what his character would do. But in terms of the viewer, the struggle, it was a pointless death. It didn't really. The only thing that benefited from it was that Chewie got a shot off, which hit Ren, which meant that he was a weaker character for the other two to fight.
It may be a pointless death, seemingly, but it first of all, it affected Rey and Finn and Chewbacca, of course, and it, now, obviously, Leia. We got to see that she is a Force user, number one. But number two, how did it affect Kylo Ren? How will it affect Kylo Ren? You know, that's what we get to see from this death, is what's going to come from it.
But that's by his actions, not necessarily. It makes Han's actions passive rather than active. And I just think for a hero active archetype, you go into a film, you want a hero to die, you want it to be something which is fantastical, which is, you know, something special. And I didn't feel that they'd made enough, I think, maybe, of Ren and Han for that to pay off. If Ren and Han had sort of been encountered earlier, or they'd done this in the second movie, I think his actions would have carried far more. It would have carried far more impact. I don't know. I mean, obviously, we're at odds with this, but I just kind of... I mean, ideally, I'd like Han, like Kirk, to have gone down with the Falcon or with the Enterprise. I always feel that was...
Well, of course, look, there's always a better death for our favorite characters. You know, I can't argue that. But I think one thing we have to consider, too, is what if Han Solo crossed that bridge knowing he wasn't bringing his son back with him? You know, what if he knew he was going to die? And as a father, he thought this could be the way that I could save him by him killing me and seeing what he's done horribly. You know, it's a sacrifice that a father would make. You know, it's terrible to think of that, but it is that there are sacrifices that parents will make for their kids that they won't do for other things. So we don't really know what was going on through Han's head. You know, he knew Leia said bring him back. Bring him back doesn't mean physically bring our son back to me at this moment. I want to give him a hug and we can talk him back out of the dark side. You know, it means bring him back to being our son. And maybe Han took that to the only way that he felt he could do it. Well, you know, I don't think it was quite the meaningless death that you think it was. I actually thought it was impactful. But...
I'm saying for the audience, I don't think it carried. I mean, I just think that...
No, I'm agreeing. That's what I'm saying.
Big characters should, like Spock's death. I mean, I'd say that's far too sad for Star Wars. But there is a memory to it that fits the character. This is almost like a forgotten death. When you think of this film, you won't think of Han Solo's axe at the end. They're sort of lost in the battle. I just think
I disagree with that. Disagree with that, because as Han Solo is my favorite character, that moment struck me very hard, and it is the one thing that I walked out, instead of everybody else posting on Facebook like what a great film, I won't give you spoilers, I simply posted to a friend was, well, shit, that sucks. And they knew what I was talking about rather than the film. They knew the moment I was talking about, and I said I'm devastated, I think is what I said. You know, so it got me. It affected me because he's always been, long been my number one character. And yes, it would be great if they went out in a blaze of glory, or if they lived to the ripe old age and just had fantastic adventures before they passed away at home in their own bed. But I don't know. The fact that it was his son, I think, made that better for me. If it was just Darth Vader, it probably would have been a bit more meaningless.
Okay, there are now 8, and you can challenge me and I will rebut you, cinematically released Star Wars movies.
Right.
I'm not going to ask you to place Star Wars Clone Wars animation feature. Where would you place The Force Awakens in the year 7?
But Easy for me. I mean, I would put, you know, it's always going to be the original trilogy or one, two, and three for me in whatever order you want to place them. I'm not really going to give them a place, but it's definitely going to come after the original trilogy for me, despite the fact that I extremely enjoyed it, that the parallels brought it down from taking a higher spot. Okay. The prequels, they're not even on the list. There's nowhere to put them on the list. Okay. There needs to be a separate list that they could be
well,
on.
Well, you know, I've given this some thought, and I would actually put it joint third because, you know, you've been, James in particular has been mentioning how similar it is to the original movie. So is Return of the Jedi. So
yes, absolutely. I think it feels like a sequel to Return of the Jedi. I'd do the same as you, Christian. I don't know. Yeah, I'd probably put it joint third.
Excellent.
Then Revenge of the Sith.
Well, you know, I didn't even see Revenge of the Sith until about 5 years ago. I missed
it. I slept through Revenge of the Sith.
Did you? That one as well. I heard about you.
No, Revenge of the Sith, though, it was not even a midnight screening. I went to go see that thing and I fell asleep because it was so damn bad. I fell asleep during the epic lava pit battle between Anakin and Ben, the one that every
Did
fan
you?
Has waited for years.
Yeah,
I still don't even know what it looked like because I slept through it.
They had four lightsaber battles before that, one with like 15 lightsabers. So by the time you got to that battle, you were lightsabered out. You didn't care. Yeah. So there was loads of mistakes in that, but I'd still put that above the first two. And I still can't decide which is worse out of Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. They've both got awful and slightly better than the other one issues. But it's a good film. I just feel it just wasn't quite as tight. I think cinema needs to tighten itself up still. I did enjoy it. I was just sitting there and I was thinking, there's something about today's films which I know sounds so old, that just need a little bit of, just need to breathe a little. I've been watching.
I think part of it's because the blockbuster sort of section of cinema seems to be dominated by the same people. I think
yes,
that's what the problem is.
I think that is a big problem, and I think it's a shame because I think Abrams did a lot of work to try and make this right, and I think he did a lot of good stuff, and he worked. I mean, I don't have any issue. I know people are complaining about how the Force was used and how they were able to fight Ren and all this sort of crap. And you think, I can get past that. I just feel the structure. I just felt a bit everywhere. Really? I just thought, really, you know, with all this money behind it, this should feel so fucking tight.
Yeah.
Why does this not feel tight? Why are we suddenly waffling around tentacles on a freighter, which... You know, why are we suddenly going to another Death Star, which has no relevance to the core drive of this film? It just felt, it could be more. I'd have done it that, as I said, that the New Order was like terrorists, that they were, you know, like the rebels were in the first film, and swapped it around. That would have perhaps been a slightly more interesting take on it. There's no need for them to be a massive killer Death Star. They could have been exactly as they were, but still a fringe rebel force that the Republic was fighting, who were after Luke Skywalker, and they were also after Luke Skywalker, so they were going.
That's a really good idea.
That would have been the way I think it should have been done. So yeah, I was just a bit disappointed in it, and I did feel that Ford phoned in that performance a bit.
Okay, that's the end of this week's podcast special. We'll be back to review The Husbands of River Song in a couple of days. Until then, goodbye. We'll be right back.